favorite scary movie. Have you checked the children?
It's all for you!
We have such sights to show you.
I can plan my responses better.
Right? This feels like old times, dude.
I know. It's a episode 240 classic because Phil's building a house in Mexico.
He's
building a house in Mexico with beer.
He's building a house in Mexico. Becoming the world's most interesting man with the smallest arms.
With the smallest, tiniest arms.
With the smallest, tiniest, tiniest arms. He's going to kick asses when he listens to this episode. But let's go ahead and get started. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Horrible People's Podcast. I am your host, Alex Webster. With me, as always, is Anthony Fuentes.
Yo.
Unfortunately, missing this week is our own Phil Acevedo. He said some shit about the Thorne trilogy that I simply couldn't let stand. So he may or may not be taking a dirt nap in the desert right now. So
we deported him. That's for sure.
No, I can't make that joke.
I can make that. He's deported right now.
You can make that joke. Yeah. I can't make that joke.
He's on his way back through the Rio Grande, but you know. It takes a while to get there, so we should knock this one out before. He'll be back next week, I'm sure, from his journey.
He'll be back next week.
Unless he becomes a mule, but I mean.
Right. I'm sure he probably brought, you know, some stuff back with him.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, okay, well, we're definitely revealing too much about our friends, but yay!
What was I going to say? Oh, so I missed a couple episodes in October. Phil is missing this week in November. I think at some point you need to just take a week off and let me and Phil run the show, which would absolutely immediately descend into madness.
Oh, that'd be interesting. I'll have to select and choose
my You're like, days. No, this is my break. This is me time. I'm taking a vacation, bitches.
I do have one in January, but we'll see.
I was going to say, maybe in January.
Maybe.
But anyway, let's go ahead and get started. We are talking about continuing our threequel theme for November, the third installment in the VHS franchise, VHS Viral, which... Man, oh man.
As we were discussing before I got disconnected and we discovered a new Phil joke, Alex has covered all the VHS to this point. This might be her baby in some way. It's your Halloween.
It is my Halloween. It is, I'm trying to think, like, what other franchise, because, like, also Friday the 13th, you always write the Friday the 13th episodes.
That's
like,
true.
You have all the classic ones. I have all the weird, niche, fucking crazy ones.
Anything French?
VHS, anything French. Usually the grosser movies.
That's true.
We've only done one Saw movie, right?
We've only done one.
Damn.
Saw could be yours.
Damn.
Saw 2 is pretty good.
Yeah. Saw. Anyway, we'll figure this out later. In the meantime, let's dive into this fucky franchise a little bit further. Mm-hmm. I will go ahead and kick it off. I did not organize parts, so we're going to have to spitball that as we go.
All right. I'm fairly good at that, so let's do it.
Yeah, we got this. So, IMDb synopsis gives us, quote, a Los Angeles police chase sends a fame-obsessed man on a wild ride to save his girlfriend from a cybernetic terror. This sounds like a comedy from 1997.
Yeah, okay. I'm thinking, like, this... That same plot line could be like a Stallone movie. Mm-hmm. It could be, it's like anything from there.
I was thinking Kurt Russell.
Kurt Russell? This is a very Kurt Russell-y plot. He would have made this way better.
Totally. So we have a few different, this one doesn't need to be there. We have a few different directors, of course, per tradition for VHS. Each vignette is directed by a different director. For Vicious Circles, we have Marcel Sarmiento. Dante the Great is directed by Greg Bishop. Parallel Monsters is directed by Nacho Vigalondo. Vigilando. Bonestorm is directed by Justin Benson, who we know and we have covered already. And Bonestorm is also directed by Aaron Scott Moorhead, the duo directors who gave us The Endless.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Yes. All right.
The release dates for this movie, it released October 23rd, 2014 on VOD. And in the U.S. on November 21st, 2014, they did, like, a small wide release. And it only made $82,000 in the box office.
Oh, good old 2014. That was 9 years ago. Holy shit.
Oh, my God, don't say that. Shut up.
Nine years, Alex. Please stop.
What I love about this also, because basically this firmly cemented VHS for the future of the franchise being 1,000% strictly VOD.
Yeah. That makes sense.
But also it kind of works in their favor, I think. Because I think a lot of people like the franchise, but they don't like it enough to pay for it.
Yeah, I don't think it's even like that good of a theater experience, it feels like. This feels more meant for at home or even a laptop.
Totally. On your laptop, on a TV, like, I feel like absolutely it has that vibe. Same thing in 2020 when they did that horror film that's entirely on Skype. And, like, watching that on my TV, like, it still gave that feel. Like, I was like, oh, my God, I feel like I'm in this cursed Zoom room.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Yeah. I'm with it. Shall I take the first plot?
Absolutely. We're going to go through each. I don't know how long this episode's going to be because I haven't written one for just us, and we tend to blow through shit a little bit faster.
It'll be all right.
But we're going to talk about the plots for each vignette and, of course, release reception, and we'll just have a cheeky little discussion at the end, so it should be a good time.
Because there's a lot to unmine from this one. But yeah, let's talk about the frame narrative here. We got the prologue section. This, of course, was again directed by Marcel Sarmiento. Okay. Written by TJ Simfeld, David White, and, of course, our director, Marcel Sarmiento.
Mm-hmm.
It stars Patrick Lowry? As Kevin, who's not Kurt Russell. And Amelia Ares is Iris, and damn, she is a fox. Anyways,
she's really hot.
I'm like, oh my God, who? More frame of her. Get this fucking piece of shit out of the way. Right. Well, see, even without Phil, you know, there's a little hint of misogyny here. So,
But thankfully, I'm here to keep you in check and spritz you with a water bottle, like that. No.
You are encouraging the behavior right now because she is circumventing that process. Anyways, Kevin, an amateur videographer, constantly shoots footage of his girlfriend Iris.
I mean, who wouldn't? Who wouldn't?
Right? Baby, take a picture. Take a picture, baby. At first, though, she claims to enjoy it, but then grows annoyed and concerned with her boyfriend's obsession with filming her, because it is, even in our brief time, kind of excessive.
It's excessive. I feel like this is a great example of, like, when you first start dating someone and you have, like, rose-colored glasses on to, like, the extreme, and it's just like, he's just so, like, interesting and does all these cute little things, like, try to videotape me all the time, and then, like, 3 months in, you're just like, I will fucking kill you if you put that camera in my face one more goddamn time. Right. Like, I just, like, she's just like, I'm just trying to paint my fucking nails, dude.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. No, it's good. Right, 3 months for sure. It definitely shows that little equation there. But it also becomes apparent that Kevin uses his videography as a coping mechanism for living with his abusive grandmother, who at one point bloodies his nose off screen. And of course, later that night, the high speed pursuit of an ice cream truck arrives in his neighborhood. So, yeah, he's not the most stable boy, I would say. No. Kevin witnesses the chase as it broadcasts on television and sees the opportunity to create a viral video. And this is 2014 viral, which is way easier.
Yeah, that's like way easier. I think in 2014, anything over like a million views was considered viral.
Mm-hmm.
Or something. Yeah. Like, it was like the threshold was in the floor.
And you can get stuff from, like, weeks later and be like, oh, this is viral now. Like, it was, there wasn't, like, the immediacy of today's internet. So, yeah.
Totally.
And, of course, they weren't shooting on VHSs. They were shooting on VHS. Our phones weren't that good back then.
No.
They were good, but they weren't, like, that good.
2014? No, I think I had. Yeah,
2014 was, like, iPhone 5.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And at that point, it's I think, because I was in college, so I didn't have the latest and greatest iPhone.
Oh, I rocked a 3GS for a long time.
Me too.
Yeah, the 3GS was the shit.
I loved my little brick iPhone.
All right, that bitch had a good battery. I was happy. Yeah, all right, well, he is too late to shoot footage, and watching the truck speed past his house, though he sees Iris wander outside the days after receiving a mysterious video call, then disappear when his back is turned. Oh, spooky.
Ooh.
Oh, mystery. Anyways, after witnessing the truck run over a cop that had asked him to back away from the road, Kevin chases after the truck, egged on by images of panicking Iris broadcast onto his very old cell phone. Yeah, I do enjoy me a good, like, random roadkill kill sometimes.
Yeah.
This one actually got me. It's going to happen, but oh, it man. Did get me.
It just reminds me of the very beginning scene of The Boys.
Which, the very first scene?
The very first scene where, like, what's-his-face runs through Huey's girlfriend.
Oh, yeah! Oh, that's a good way of doing it. I was thinking Scary Movie.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay, two different trains of thought here.
Yeah, okay. Voices, they're both pretty good. So, yeah. Kevin continues pursuit of the truck as it repeatedly circles the neighborhood. And of course, this carries on throughout the film, during which people receive strange images on their cell phones that cause them to become violently insane.
Ooh.
Of course, this is when the film transitions to the first segment. Now, this is the most comprehensive, I think, like, frame narrative.
I agree,
of what we've seen so far.
I think we'll talk about it when we get to our thoughts, but I think it's to the detriment of the whole movie, in my opinion.
Interesting. I actually have the opposite opinion, but we'll
really
see. We'll see when we get there. We got one more segment.
We have so many segments.
What's this first segment, eh?
We're talking about Dante the Great. This one was fun. Yeah. Okay, so this was directed and written by Greg Bishop. And we have Justin Welborn as Dante the Great and Emmy Argo as Scarlet K, and then Dane Quaddle as Detective Gregory Hughes.
Oh, Dane Quaddle's such an interesting name.
Coddle. I switched the U and the A in my head, but it's...
Oh, yeah, Coddle.
Coddle.
Okay, that's not as cool.
It's not, but that's fine.
Detective Dane Quaddle, at your service.
At your service, sir.
Oh, my, there's a lot of blood here.
Or it's Dane the Quaddle. Other side where it's just like, oi, what's all this then?
What's all this thing? That's Dane Quaddle. Dane Quaddle, to the mystery.
Anyway.
We made a new character, Wes. No, keep going. Sorry.
No, it's okay. Lest Dan Quaddle come after us. John McMullen, a trailer park resident and untalented illusionist, discovers a cloak that was once owned by the one, the only, Harry Houdini.
Ooh.
John discovers that wearing the cloak grants him the power to perform actual magic. Taking on the stage name Dante the Great, John uses his newfound abilities to perform in front of large audiences, becoming immensely famous. I love that they tried to make him look as famous as possible with the budget that they had.
Oh. They were really stretching it.
Unfortunately, because of the limitations of budget that they had, it made him look like he was like just above like a Vegas street performer.
Like he's in front of the same fucking theater. It's like, yeah, this is like off Broadway famous right here.
off Broadway. Oh mm-hmm. no. Yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm.
However, it was right next to the porn theater. That's how.
Oh no! Yeah. Not the. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, the porno. Yeah. So, let's see. However, John learns that the cloak requires regular human sacrifices to work. To that end, he hires a slew of female assistants and, for some reason, videotapes them as he utters an incantation and watches the cloak devour them. Me personally.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I'm saying this into a microphone that is recording and it will be uploaded to the internet. If I were to commit a crime, I wouldn't videotape it, personally.
Yeah, but you don't have any fucking magic.
It's that you know of.
Oh, that's some Slytherin shit right there.
I
did not get his letter.
I hang out with too many Slytherins, I think.
You really do, yeah, because you're the Hufflepuff in the middle.
I am. I'm just a Hufflepuff.
I'm just a Hufflepuff.
Hey, I fucking love being a Hufflepuff, okay? Everyone talks shit.
You're about to break into song right there. I'm just a Hufflepuff.
La-da-da, la-da-da.
Why is that the murdering Hufflepuff right there?
Fucking get her.
I should videotape her crimes. Okay.
Yeah, you'll never catch me alive.
No, for that fucking coddle.
No. He also uses his powers to summon and kill Clay Bowen, the abusive boyfriend of Sir K, his latest assistant, and also one that he is notably very horny for.
Yeah, no, he's definitely more horny than the rest, for sure.
Yeah, she's special, man. I don't know. Mm-hmm. When Scarlet discovers John's collections of tapes in a secret compartment not so conspicuously hidden in a fucking electrical switchboard for someone's house, in his dressing room, she alerts the police. Though John is able to use his powers to escape custody because, you know, famously when people get arrested, they get to keep their capes.
Yeah. No, the and they have video evidence of how deadly this can be.
Yeah. Like, they saw the videotapes and they didn't think, like, we should take this weird sentient, like, cape. It's like the flying carpet, but for fucking, it's a cape. And only if the flying carpet was a murderer, which we don't know that it wasn't.
Right? It's like a reformed carpet. It's like, okay, now we're going to do some, like, assault and bashing shit, actually.
Yeah. let's see. So as she is interrogated by a detective, John uses his newfound powers to summon her from the police station. If a police at any point says, is it okay if I record this conversation? The answer is, I would like a lawyer, please. Just know that. That is it.
If the police tells you anything, the answer is
I would like a lawyer, please.
Mm-hmm. Do you want some coffee?
I would like a lawyer.
Please. Talk to my attorney.
No, do not talk to the cops, ever.
Mm-hmm.
And that is my opinion, not the opinion of the podcast nor the network. It's just my personal fucking opinion.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm with you. Seconded.
Co-signed by the two creators of the network, but it's not the opinion of the network.
Yeah, unless you want to deport Phil, which we did, is why we talked to
the cops. He did. I had nothing to do with it.
It's okay. He'll be back. He's a resilient little guy.
Little arms. A SWAT team bursts in to arrest John, but John manages to use his magic to kill all of them. He proceeds to duel with Scarlet over the magic cloak.
Wow.
You know, the final fight in Harry Potter with Voldemort really had nothing on this.
No, it really didn't.
It was nuts. It was like you had access to the powers of the cloak as long as you were touching the cloak. So it's just, it's so dumb. I love this vignette so much, but it's so dumb.
I mean, honestly, it's not that much dumber than Ron and Hermione with a fang chasing a fucking snake. For, like, 15 minutes.
Okay, I need you to mind your fucking Chamber of Secrets slander.
No, that's Deathly Hallows Part 2 slander.
Oh, it is? Oh, okay, that's fair. You know what, I'll respect that.
Yeah. They're just trying to stab a snake, and they keep fucking missing.
How do you miss the snake?
Oh, it's great. Yeah, no, Neville would have ended this shit real fast.
if only Neville were here.
Yeah.
Anyway, so, let's see. They're dueling over the magic cloak. Though Scarlet is briefly able to take it from him, John overpowers her and recovers it. Before John can kill her, Scarlet uses a trick he taught her to immobilize him, prompting the cloak to feed on him instead. This was fun. I was just like, that's not a sleight of hand trick. How? Because I personally want to know how they did that.
It's, you know what? It's fine. It's just, it's VHS, baby.
So, Scarlet burns the cloak, only to find it in her house, hanging on her closet door later. As she investigates it, a pair of giant shadowed arms reach out from inside the cloak and grab her and say, lovey. I will say, this vignette also was, like, very, well, like, what's the word I'm looking for? It was a mockumentary.
Yeah, it, like, but it really was barely like a found footage film.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it was like filmed like a mockumentary, but it was also, I'm just like, how do you, like, how are we getting this footage? Explain that to me.
Right? They were very much pushing it, that's for sure. But yeah, this is fun.
It's fun. Very,
yeah. It got dumber as it went along, that's for sure.
Yes, but, you know, that's just the way of it with VHS, so.
No, you're right. VHS has... all these segments in any VHS movie have a habit of having a pretty strong first half and a what-the-fuck second half. Yeah. But the disparity's not as big for this one, but it's still there, if that makes sense.
Totally.
Yeah, yeah, well... let's go back to our vicious circles here, or, yeah, should I cover this in the next one?
Yes, because it's short, so.
Gotcha, gotcha. Okay, where's my... I scrolled up too high. Here I am. All right, well, we're turning to the frames right now, right? Oh, give me magic! Oh, I have a magic mouse!
God damn it. I was more just like, we're trying our best! Phil's not here!
No, I have a magic mouse. Official Apple property right there. So, yes. Returning to frame the story... Kevin and the police continue pursuing the truck. A group of teenagers attempt to film the chase from atop a nearby bridge, with one of them staring at his phone in a trance while his nose bleeds. And nosebleeds in horror? Not good.
Never good.
Usually never good. Usually not great regularly.
They don't. But. Yeah, I mean, listen, if you're in Southern California and you've been dealing with these pesky Santa Ana winds, I've been having nosebleeds every single night.
Really?
Yeah. Like, I wake up in the morning and, like, sorry for the grossness, but, like, I'm, like, blowing out blood every morning.
Damn.
It's disgusting.
Weak-ass nose, Webster?
Yeah, I don't know.
Stop picking it!
Too much coke, I guess. I don't know.
Or pick it more.
No!
Yeah. Clear that bitch up. No, but, so, another one of the teenagers ends up slipping and falling from the bridge when he gets too close. Being run over in the process. Of course, Kevin is halted by a group of cyclists, but they end up helping him pursue the truck when one of them is caught on it. His feet is shredded to the bone.
This is so fucked.
It's gross and hilarious at the same time. I don't know, I found this funny. And is ultimately killed.
It's a scary movie death for sure.
Yeah, it really is. But also, like, okay, cyclists in L.A., they're kind of the dumbest fucking people in the world.
Oh, so, yeah, you know, they're
of
the
course
worst.
This would happen to. They really are shit human beings. Anyways, despite that, I get you want to work out, but, like, dude, it's like swimming with the sharks when you're doing
that. I get you want to save the environment. I get you want to, like, do something for you. Like, I get all that, but also get out of my fucking way.
Yeah, you are burdened, and I can't imagine how much more of a burden you are in your personal life.
You are burdened. The public. Know that if you are a cyclist and drive in the streets of Los Angeles, you are a burden.
Yes, yes.
We're mean, terrible fucking bitches.
And you would make these kinds of terrible decisions for sure. So, but
we
despite
know
this,
that,
of course,
yeah. For to be certain.
Well. Kevin continues his mission to save Iris, and the film, of course, transitions to this next segment.
See,
which...
what I don't like about this movie, one thing of many things, they don't have, like, a someone watching the videotape type thing. Like, it's, you know, like, in the first one, like, he actually has physical VHS tapes that
he's
watching.
They were, like, discovered.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, it made sense why we're seeing it. In this one, it's just like, who's watching this? What's going on? Help me.
Yeah.
Help me understand.
That makes sense, but I mean, they can't keep doing it. It's a limitation they probably had to excise at some point because they're going to keep making them. So they're like, no.
Yeah. It's a little nitpicky on my part, but it didn't make a whole lot of sense in something that didn't already make a whole lot of sense. So.
Yeah. There's not a lot of sense to any of these, and particularly this one, though. I do love this one.
Yeah. I was going to say, Oops.
This is like my favorite, probably,
there's
actually.
There's a typo there.
That's okay. Sorry. Oh, I'll get you before I can even look at it.
Oh, yeah.
All right, well,
this is
Parallel Monsters.
Oh, man, this one's so wild.
This one's great. Directed and written, of course, by Nacho Vigalondo. And it stars Gustavo Salmeron as Alfonso and Marian Alvarez as Martha.
Martha. Oh.
Martha! I'm going to just do my Spanish soap opera voices.
Oh, man.
Now that we're done with Detective... I know.
Phil would have been so good for a fucking telenovela voice.
Especially this one with the... I'm not going to spoil it yet, but it's fun. In Spain, Alfonso, an inventor, He works late on his newest project, promising his wife, Martha, that he will come to the bed soon. Now, his project is revealed to be a prototype interdimensional portal. That's right. Upon activating the portal, it opens to reveal what appears to be his own garage. Oy, oy, oy.
At what point in this would you, like, just bail and close the portal? I think the second I opened it, saw my own garage, and I was just like, nope, I'm good. Close it.
But see, like, what notes do I have going in? I'm just like, this was the goal. So, sure. I don't know. Sure. I don't know what my motivation would be at this point.
I just also don't think that, like, I don't think we should do interdimensional travel. I think it's a bad idea. Reasons much similar to this.
You would be in the Martha position then.
I don't want to be in the Martha position.
Well, it depends which one. Alfonso witnesses a copy of himself look at him from the other side, revealing that the portal has successfully opened a gateway into a parallel world. And the two versions of Alfonso cautiously greet each other, overcome by curiosity, and discover that they appear to be completely identical. And this is actually, I think, a very effective scene. Like, it caught my attention, like, immediately. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, which direction are they gonna go? Not great. So the two agree to trade places and cross through the portal with their own cameras to explore and document each other's world for 15 minutes. And this is a really bad decision.
It's so not bad. It's not such good. It's also, mm-hmm. like, this gives me, like Dead Ringers vibes, where the twins switch places and, like, play each other. And I'm like, this is so icky.
Oh, that's a very good way of putting it. Absolutely. Absolutely. It's icky. Yes, and it gets ickier because Alfonso explores the alternate version of his house. It would seem that the two worlds are exact mere duplicates. Seem being the operative words, because Alfonso then encounters the parallel version of Marta, who introduces him to two men, both named Oriol. I can't remember. Oriol?
Sure.
Oriol. Oriol! I'm going to do my the fucking bird. Oriol!
Oriol!
So, in the living room, a pornographic snuff film plays on the television, and a sack of organs is displayed in the center of the room. The parallel Marta prompts Alfonso to perform a ceremony with the Orioles. I was like, oh, she's like a swinger.
Yeah, I thought it was like a swinger thing, or I don't know.
I'm like, that's pretty simple, but then the organ thing happens, and I'm like, oh, this is going to get a lot
worse. That's one way to put it.
It's going to get much worse. So, disturbed, Alfonso leaves the house and witnesses a large blimp with an inverted cross that blares demonic chanting, revealing that the two worlds hold differing dominant religions.
I did kind of like that.
Yeah. It's a lot. It's actually a very cool effect too. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know what the clearly it's low budget across the board, but this was a better use of it. They made it work. Yeah. Now, when he attempts to record the blimp, he gets spotted by the two Orioles, and who chase Alfonso before catching him. This is going to be interesting. Their eyes and mouth turn bright red, and one of the Orioles takes his pants off to reveal that he has a fanged creature in place of his penis. That's right. Monster penis.
Monster cock.
Monster cock. Wow. Hey. Don't Google that.
There are books. There are books.
Anyways, back in the normal world, the parallel Alfonso discovers Martha asleep, growing aroused and taking photos of her before unveiling his own monstrous genitalia, scaring Martha away.
Truly horrifying.
Yeah, this was some shit. But also,
Never get married because one day your significant other will build an interdimensional portal device, switch places, and that other version of him will have a monster cock.
Yes. Yes, absolutely, and it's, again, not like the way Google does it. It's an actual vicious monster. Pretty bad. And I also appreciate how it cuts to the parallel Alfonso when he's walking through and seeing them, like, happily married and all the stuff. He's like, what the fuck are these weirdos? Mm-hmm. Like, he kind of has that weird vibe to it, which is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, in the parallel world, Alfonso manages to stab the Oriel's penis with a screwdriver and flees back to the house, where the parallel Marta takes off her robe to reveal that she has similarly demonic vagina, actually. And oh boy, it is gross. So
it's that, like, the demon cock, like, I was kind of like, that's, you know what, I'll deal with that. But then you get to, like, just demon snatch. Just demon snatch.
And literal demon snatch.
Yeah, exactly. And I was, that, like, I remember the first time I saw this movie, I was horrified. I was like, this is the worst thing I've ever seen.
Ooh, satanic snatch. That's how we'll look at it. It's a satanic snatch. Demon dick satanic snatch.
There's a joke there.
Well, terrified, Alfonso punches her and flees back to his world. The parallel Alfonso, covered in blood after his encounter with Marta, stabs his normal self. The parallel Marta appears and devours the parallel Alfonso with her fanged vagina before the original Alfonso closes the portal.
So I love this because there's also, like, a brief, like, line in here that's just, like, basically using excessive, or, like, using, like meeting force with equal force in the face of domestic violence, basically. Yes. Like, it's just like, you broke the law in terms of domestic violence. That means I get to kill you.
Yep. Oh, which, you know, great.
Goes to show maybe Satan snatch and demon cock is not, like, the worst thing in the world.
Right. It became a dominant religion for a reason.
Right.
But, I found it so interesting that, like, regular ass Alfonso ends up screwing over his parallel creepy self.
Yeah.
And I thought that was great. And also great what happens next, because Marta, regular Marta appears and, mistakenly believing that Alfonso attacked her, begins furiously stabbing him as he pleads for her to stop. So we don't know what happened to her based on demon dick, but it's not going to be great.
I mean, she was covered in blood. It didn't look good. You know what I mean? Like, I just don't. It seems.
This is where the ambiguity works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it leaves stuff up to your imagination, which it frankly shouldn't, because I'm immediately jumping to the worst case scenario.
Yeah, but also, like, this is, to me, has that classic VHS, like, ironic ending, like that swerve.
Yes, I do 100% agree. I think, we'll talk about it when we talk about the vignettes as a whole, but yes, I totally agree on that front.
Good swerve.
Now, good swerve.
Uh-oh. You want to take an interlude and this other one?
Yes. Vicious Circles. Interlude. Dose. So, returning to the frame story, Kevin continues to pursue the truck as it continues to circle the neighborhood, begging the police all the while to help him save Iris. Meanwhile, a group of Hispanic gangbangers, that was Wikipedia's description, not mine, are holding a
a group of vatos. They're vatos.
Are holding a barbecue to celebrate one of their own being released from prison.
And probably a baby's birthday, because that's how Mexican parties work.
They just combine it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Seeing the police helicopter that has been broadcasting the chase, one of them assumes that his girlfriend has turned him in.
Oh. His hyena fucking betrayed him.
Oh, no. Dude, stop it. I have to be a Phil in this moment. Stop it.
These are my people, Alex. They all look like my uncles. What do you want me to do?
I know. So, suddenly, the music playing on the radio warps and turns operatic, causing the guest of honor to become violent and murder the others by stabbing them with forks. Which,
damn.
Frankly, yeah, that's just nuts. As the truck and Kevin pass, it is revealed that a gas tank has ruptured in the chaos, causing the party to go up in an enormous fireball. The film transitions to the last segment. This one, I liked this one.
This was my favorite one. Of the bumpers.
We only get a snippet of the main story, and this is kind of just like, meanwhile, like, I don't know. I dug it. Yeah.
No, and again, I always love my Latino representation in media, and sure. I was like, this is accurate. This would happen. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I always remember, what was that one cop movie with Jake Gyllenhaal?
End of Watch.
I remember watching the reviews, or reading the reviews, the comments for it. And people would be, like, on Reddit and be like, these cartoonish villains, like, it's not even real. I'm just like, and then all the California people are like, You fucking people are, like, stupid.
Right.
they are not cartoonish at all. That's great.
Fun story about End of Watch. So, back in my senior year of high school, I want to say, my stepdad and his really good friend came over, and my mom was, like, out that night with, like, my aunts or something. I don't remember. Point is that it was just us, and they got me super fucking drunk. Like, super drunk. And I was 17, so I had, like, no tolerance. And I was just like, oh, this is how it's supposed to feel. And I really should have just stopped drinking. Mm-hmm. And we were watching End of Watch for whatever reason. And it's, like, not, like, a feel-good movie.
No. It is. And it's sad and propaganda.
And I just remember being so, like, I don't like this movie. Like, I was just not feeling it. And when I went to bed, I had my very first case of the spins, but I had never been drunk before, so I didn't know how to fix it.
Oh!
I didn't know how to not be dizzy while I was laying down. And the next morning, I told my stepdad, and he's like, you're supposed to put your foot on the floor. And I was just like, what? And he's just like, he laughed so hard. I was just how was I supposed to know that?
That is lovely. All right. So, thanks, End of Watch, for that experience.
Yeah, that's my only, like, I haven't seen it since. I don't remember anything about the movie. I just remember being like, this made me feel not good.
Yeah. No, it is a sad one, but it is also found footage. So, there you go.
It is. Mm-hmm, and, mm-hmm. Yeah, no, not my favorite. Anyway. Let's move on, shall we? Mm-hmm. To Bone Storm, which is directed by Justin Benson and Aaron Scott Moorhead, and written by Justin Benson. We have Nick Blanco as Danny and Chase Newton as Jason. And a bunch of other cavalcade characters, and all of them look the same and act exactly the same.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
They are very annoying. And maybe, like, you know, skater boys, man.
Yeah.
So, Jason and Danny are a pair of skateboarders in, of course, Los Angeles, who perform various stunts in the hopes of creating an epic skateboard video. This is on par with cyclists, like skateboarders who, like, just don't behave well.
Oh my gosh.
It drive me up the wall.
They really do. Also another LA problem. They're not always as in the way as the cyclists.
I mean,
so, I give them credit.
They're a little bit dodgier.
They're not, like, on the sides of the roads inconvenience me when I'm trying to go to the store, you know?
Yeah,
but they will be in front of the store.
But if I'm walking somewhere and they come down the street and nearly take me out...
That's true.
And I know that is such, like, a 75-year-old woman yells at cloud type situation to be mad about, but...
Hey, it's not your fault if your elbow is out a little further when they happen to cast by, you know?
Yeah, that's funny.
That's their fault.
So, the videographer that they hired, Taylor, pushes them into increasingly dangerous circumstances in the hopes that they injure or kill themselves so he can film the aftermath and sell it as a snuff film.
Mm. Okay.
Love that.
Skater logic.
Sure, yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna get so fucking rich off this fucking snuff film, dude. So fucking rich. After they start a fight at a local skate park, the skaters become bored. Taylor suggests they continue the film shoot in Tijuana, remembering that he heard about a prime skating location for them to finish their video.
Oh my gosh.
Because you know what? Taylor calls out to their friend Sean and rope him into joining him in their trip to Mexico by paying for everything with his dad's credit card.
Oh, okay, this feels like it's from the 90s and not 2014. This feels like a 90s
VHS
bit.
I would say definitely late 90s, early 2000s for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I just, like, just the fact that, like, you have access to a parental figure's credit card, I think, personally, is a sign of privilege.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Like, what do you... Like, I don't know. My mom would, like, freak out if I went near her purse, let alone was just like, I'm gonna steal this fucking credit card.
Right? Oh, yay, yay.
So, but,
you know.
After enjoying themselves and buying fireworks, the skaters subsequently become lost and run into a mysterious woman in, like, what... Basically, it was definitely the LA River just repurposed to Mexico. Which also, by the way, in the very, very beginning, when Iris is just like, that's a river. And I'm just like, yes, it's the LA River. Okay. It's weird, but it's our weird.
Technically a river. Yes.
Technically a river. I also like that the second, they did the stupid post 9/11 thing. Where mm-hmm. when they go to a different country, specifically Mexico or any place in Latin America, that it becomes like they put like a yellow tinge.
The yellow filter.
The yellow
That's
filter
right.
immediately.
The Breaking Bad filter.
The Breaking mm-hmm. Bad filter, yeah. Immediately. And I just, it was noticeable and I laughed my ass off.
Right. No, I'm with you. That was, oh my gosh. It's of its time. It's of its time.
It's of its time, which it shouldn't be of 2014. It's more like of 2005. But that's just... me. Mm-hmm. So once they find a suitable place, the old flood channel, Taylor encourages them to perform more stunts. When one of the skateboarders injures himself and bleeds on a large pentagram drawn on the ground that they never noticed, his blood quickly boils despite the apparent relatively normal temperature of the pavement on which the pentagram is drawn. Yeah, if your blood starts boiling like that, maybe leave.
Also, always be on the lookout for pentagrams.
Always. You have to. Like, mm-hmm. yeah, look where you... Look at where you're performing your weird snuff film video stuff.
That's advice. Official advice from the Horrible People's Podcast.
Look at the ground when you're filming yeah. your snuff films.
Yeah, please. You'll never know when you'll randomly stumble into a pentagram. The logic is really unfolding as we make this joke.
Yeah. It's a house of cards, baby. It's a house of cards. So the skaters discover the woman they met earlier standing nearby. As Taylor introduces himself and offers to film her, she suddenly tears his arm off. And honestly, good for her.
Yeah.
He's so smarmy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So immediately after, a group of cloaked cultists who were using the channel as a site for demonic worship discover the skaters and attack them. The skateboarders manage to kill them all, though Taylor is set on fire while Sean is stabbed by one of the cultists and bleeds out during the fight.
Yeah, they're getting capped here. This is like some Red Wedding shit.
As a demonic roar sounds, Anthony, please move your... thank you. Roar sounds, the dead cultists rise as reanimated skeletons and mount a second attack.
This is the White Walkers.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, right. This is 2014, so yeah, Game of Thrones was still...
Yeah, Prime Thrones time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, during the second attack, Jason and Danny use the fireworks they bought earlier to destroy several of the skeletons. The two proceed to skate back towards the border as the creature the cultists were attempting to summon appears from a storm drain, who picks up and kills the wounded Taylor by eating him along with his camera.
Mm.
Dun, dun, dun.
Mm-hmm. That was a segment.
That was certainly a segment.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely interesting, but we'll talk about it a little bit,
yes,
I'm sure.
Absolutely.
Let's move on, because we are about to wrap this bitch up.
Woo-hoo!
Now, interlude 3, returning to the story. The news broadcasting the chase is warning that several fires have broken out across the city. Holy shit. That's a normal fucking Saturday in LA. I don't know why that's so special, but it's fine.
Hey.
As an Angelino, you know how many fucking like smoke stacks that I see?
It's just true. Yeah.
There's so many.
It's just like, oh, okay, well, hope everyone's okay. Just keep on trucking.
That's somebody's house. Let's keep doing this. All right, so Kevin still continues to chase the truck, at one point encountering a woman in a trance with her nose bleeding with them Santa winds, baby. Kevin tries to get a taxi cab to stop, but the driver refuses to. The driver also helps his friend, a porn director, film a striptease with a young woman in the back seat.
This was so weird.
Very random. Suddenly, the woman pulls a gun on him, revealing that the director had previously been sold pornographic footage of her by her ex, and the exposure had apparently ruined her life. Very roundabout revenge. So she forces him to strip by threatening to shoot his crotch. The director fights back, strangling her, but all three are killed when the police car flips through the air and crushes the taxi. The film then finally gives us an epilogue. That is just like a hard take on that one scene from Boogie Nights. Wow, yeah, that was so...
It was weird.
You're right, the interludes get a little weirder.
They do.
They definitely, yeah. Well, to end this, at dawn, Kevin finally catches up to the truck. He finds it sitting in the empty river basin he had been filming Iris near at the beginning of the film. Body parts strewn on the ground around it, which not a good sign typically.
Dun, dun, dun.
Although not unfamiliar for the LA River. He examines the driver's seat, only to find it empty, with a pair of disembodied hands duct taped to the wheel. Upon examining the back of the truck, he finds a number of televisions stacked atop each other, as in the first two movies. Oh, the mystery is unfolding here. Iris appears on the TV screen and demands that Kevin upload the footage to broadcasters and the internet as well. At first, he refuses, mentioning that the videos are causing people all over the city to go insane. But when Iris begins to brutally mutilate herself by fucking hitting her fucking face against the wall...
It was weird.
Yeah, he relents and pushes a button labeled upload.
Again, this is such a 2014 thing where it's just like, I'm going to push a button and send it to everyone ever.
To the World Wide Web,
to
baby.
The World Wide Web.
Mm-hmm. Well, with the deed done, he exits the truck as the image of Iris on the screen continues to taunt him. Outside, he discovers Iris, having actually been dead for some time, slumped against the truck with her cell phone stuck in her mouth. Oof. Kevin pulls the phone out of her mouth and sees that it is in selfie mode. He stares in shock at himself on the screen with his own nose bleeding. Well, the closing shot of the film, set to the finale from Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, is a view of the Los Angeles skyline, smoke billowing up, lights flickering on and off, and a helicopter circling overhead, revealing the uploaded videos have gone viral and have begun to affect thousands, thus fulfilling the grander threat introduced in the first two films. And again, riots are not uncommon here. I don't know why this is special.
I think, you know, and like not even the rolling blackouts are that entirely uncommon.
No. No.
If this was happening during the summer, like for sure, like everyone would just be like, ah, fuck.
Right? Yeah. No, that's a good point. Yeah. It's something we prepare for. Maybe the upload thing will be, some people will see it, I'm sure. There's a lot of stuff for us to see.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff for, you know, us. SoCal folk to watch.
Precisely. Okay.
So.
Well, that's the movie.
That's the movie. Yay! Mm-hmm. All right, let's talk about the release and reception of this movie, which, as expected, is divisive, to say the least.
Much more than the previous two, I would say, sure.
So on Rotten Tomatoes, 33% of 33 critics' reviews are positive, with an average rating of 4.1 out of 10. The website's critical consensus reads, VHS Viral is hardly a sensation as it cycles through the franchise's least frightening vignettes yet, unquote.
I mean, yeah, they're the least frightening, I'd say.
For sure.
Yeah, like, by far.
Yes. Peter DeBruge of Variety describes the film as, quote, three playful yet thoroughly disposable experiments in short-form POV cinema, unquote.
Ooh, good review.
Short form POV cinema does just sound like POV porn.
I was thinking the same thing. Short form POV blank.
Yeah.
POV blank.
Yeah. Sean McComber of Fangoria rated it 3 out of 4 stars and wrote that the change in tone from previous entries in the film series will alienate some fans, but is, quote, a welcome breather, unquote. Sean, you're out of your fucking element.
Sean, also, great last name, buddy.
McComber.
McComber.
Yeah, he's friends with the detective. We got Detective McComber, and we got Detective...
I'd like to introduce my partner, Sean McComber.
McComber.
Okay, we're having too much fun here. All right, let's go. Let's get... Hey, what else we got?
We got a... I lost my place. Let's see. Brad McHargu of Dread Central rated it 4 out of 5 stars as well. And the review does not reflect this. He wrote, quote, the shorts that compromise VHS Viral are inventive enough to make up for the blunder that is Saramento's wraparound, even if each one breaks the found footage rules in egregious ways, unquote.
I mean, it really breaks these fucking rules.
In like, egregious ways.
Yeah, this is barely found footage.
Barely. And, like, we'll talk about it, but I think that's a big part of the reason that it just, like, it's not my fave.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
So, VHS Viral didn't perform as well on Letterboxd Letterboxd either, with a 1.9 out of 5 average rating out of 20,800 reviews.
Ooh, that is not good.
That is not good. Aaron, with 2 stars, said, quote, had roughly about the same style and substance as a man being violently dragged across concrete, unquote.
Mm, okay. All right, Aaron.
Sober Slap with 1.5 stars. Quote, at least the parallel world had decent punishment for domestic violence, unquote.
Hey, I like it.
Tom with 1 star. Diabolical in every fucking sense of the word. The worst horror film of all time. Cunt, unquote.
Jesus, Tom.
I just wanted that.
That's a good one, though.
That one made me laugh. And finally, Theo, with 0.5 star. Quote, fantastically layered, multifarious motion picture set in an introspective, transfixed world of fanaticism and philanthropy, deconstructing barriers of social anxiety and conglomerate political agendas. JK, this is just really fucking bad. You're really bad. Unquote.
You tried.
So, what about the future VHS? The future of VHS after this, widely considered failure. In June of 2020, it was announced that a reboot of the VHS franchise was in development with a 4th installment titled VHS 94, written by David Bruckner. VHS 94 had its world premiere at Fantastic Fest in September of 2021 and opened to positive critical reviews, with the initial reactions being that it was a return to form for the series. So I'm very much looking forward to covering that at some point.
I actually quite enjoyed 94.
No, I loved 94. Much, yeah. I really liked VHS 94. I haven't seen 99 or 85 though.
Oh, those are good too. Yeah. They're fantastic stuff. We should definitely make a point to watch those as well because they're really good.
Hell yeah.
That's what we got, guys.
So let's discuss. Anthony Fuentes, what are your thoughts on VHS Viral?
Definitely the weakest,
okay.
I would say. It's definitely the weakest.
I felt like we had conflicting opinions on this one.
Well, I also didn't hate it, though.
Okay.
Like, I really thought the parallel universe segment was actually very good. Like, really good. One of the better segments, I think, of the whole series, for sure. Dante the Great was camp as fuck, but it has its appeal, if that makes sense to me. I think it ended way worse than it started, but I still quite enjoyed it.
I feel like if it had more found footage elements, it would have been a good entry in 1 or 2.
Honestly, you're right, because the lack of found footage elements and the weird style took me out of it a lot.
Yeah.
Like, it actually took me out of it a lot. I did not like the fucking Skate Kids.
It didn't
do anything for me, actually. It really was bad.
Yeah.
And then the wraparounds, like, first one was good, the fucking essays was great, everything else kind of whatever. But, you know, to me, like, I'm actually considering VHS now probably one of the stronger horror franchises out there, because despite this being, again, quite a weak entry in the series, it is, what do you call, still fun. It's still really fun.
There's still, fun elements, yeah.
Yeah, it's still, like, not a hard watch, it's a very easy watch. It just gets worse. And it has a shitty ending. But, you know, that's pretty 101 for horror.
Yeah, so, totally. Like, when you have a franchise as extensive as... there's 6 total VHS movies now?
Yeah.
Like, they all can't be bangers.
No, they all can't be bangers. No, but, you know, the banger-to-shit ratio is in its favor, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But this one's clearly the most, like, inconsistent, I would say, of the ones we've seen so far on this show, and of all the ones I've seen, which now I've seen every single one of them. So, yeah.
Totally.
Most inconsistent, I would say.
Okay, yeah, fair. So, I think because I love this franchise so much, I'm a little bit more critical, but I do not like this one at all.
No?
It's more, there are elements that I enjoy, but overall, as a whole, it's a bit of a slog for me.
Oh, interesting.
Which is crazy, considering that the first one has a bajillion vignettes, and it takes, like, it's like a two, like, it's over 2 hours, if I remember correctly.
It's a long one.
The first VHS is long. This one, like, just, I didn't like the main storyline. It just didn't, the frame narrative, I didn't love it, mainly because every two seconds there was like some video interference, like the glitchiness, and it made it borderline unwatchable for me.
Honestly, stylistically, not great.
I do like the idea of like a like the through line of like this story happening at the same time, because from my understanding, all of these vignettes were happening like around the same time ish. Mm-hmm. I think, I'm not entirely sure, but like I know like Dante the Great, obviously like that can all happen at once, but like that was my thought process, right? But I really liked the frame narrative just for that creative through line. But I think they put a little bit too much stock in that being like the big scary reveal at the end.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. It seems they got a little too overambitious with
the frame narrative. Yes, that's a great way to describe it. It felt like overambitious. Yeah, it felt really overambitious to me. Because also, like, I'm interested in aspects that weren't explored in this storyline. So when the guy goes, to the ice cream truck and like he just sees basically like disembodied like hands tied to the truck, like it indicates that someone was forced to drive that truck against their will.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to know more about that.
Yeah, that's true.
That would have been a great vignette of its own to tie into the main narrative of how that guy got there and basically was like forced to cause a police chase. That that's just where my brain went. But also, like, we watch horror movies for like not our job, but like, you know what I mean?
No, that makes sense. And yeah, and I mean, to me, it's weird because, yep, I don't know. I think maybe I turned my brain off a lot for it, if that makes sense. My brain was way off
when watching this one. As you famously know, I have a very hard time doing that.
I know. That's what I'm saying. I'm like, I can definitely see the criticisms, but also, like, in the grand scheme of the franchise,
It could have been worse, and I completely agree with you on that front. It could have been worse. It is by far, in my opinion, the weakest entry of the of the VHS films that I have seen, because I haven't seen the last two yet.
Definitely watch them. Watch them today.
Today, I mean, I'm not doing shit today. I'm seeing Five Nights at Freddy's later. That's about it.
There you go.
So, okay, that's fair. But yeah, just for me, it was the video interference, like the static and shit in the main narrative that really took me out of it. Like it made it hard for me to connect, I guess.
Well, that I would also say, this is definitely the least scary of all six.
Yeah, it's like,
by far.
It's weird and like it's kind of, what's the word? Uncanny at times, but it's not scary in
there's
the
no
same
horror
way.
Segments.
Yeah,
maybe the parallel universe, maybe, but even then there's like a dystopian aspect to it.
Widely, that was like the highlight of the reviews that I saw. They're like, that one was good, the other ones are just kind of lackluster.
Yeah, and there's so like it's so much more short than the other ones. Like, honestly, the one big thing, too, at the end, I wanted another segment. I wanted one more.
Oh, you did? Like,
yeah, I felt a little ripped off that I only got three big ones, and then that the bumper really like, took over most of the narrative. So I kind of wanted one more, like, not set in Los Angeles, its own thing kind of segment, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. All right. So I think we're probably going to have the same answers here, but rank the vignettes from least favorite to favorite.
Parallel, magician, and then the skateboard bitches.
That was your favorite?
Yep. No. Skateboard's lowest.
Oh, I said least favorite to favorite.
Oh, my bad. Least favorite skateboard fuckers. Middle is magician, and then top is absolutely the parallel by far.
Okay. Where does the main narrative land?
Right underneath the magician. It's almost tied, honestly.
Okay, we have the same exact one. Like the for me, it's also what's the name of it? Bone Storm, then Vicious Circles, then Parallel Monsters. Or sorry, then Dante the Great, then Parallel Monsters. Yeah.
Yeah, I like it. I think that seems like an accurate rating. Again, I think there's big gaps in the quality.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Unfortunately, yeah.
Yeah, I think that they gave all of the directors, like, the same budget, I highly suspect, and they all just kind of definitely, you saw where people emphasized their budgets.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Some were smarter than others.
Yes.
That's for sure.
Yes. So how does this compare to previous VHS films that we've covered? We've covered one, we've covered two, and now this is the third one. What are your thoughts, Anthony?
By far the worst. But also, I mean, one and two really, even compared to the ones after this, kind of stand on their own. There's not, this is to me a sign of what direction the series would go in. But later films would do what this tries to do much better.
Yeah.
For right now, this seems like the most transitionary one, but I think it's such a drastic difference from the first two. I can see why people are turned off by it. I still enjoyed it, obviously, but I think the first two really do, like, I don't know, they stand on their own. They're really of a time where found footage was obviously, like, much more grainy, and they pushed the boundaries, it seems like. And this did not push any kind of boundaries for me. There wasn't anything, like, you know, like, oh, like, fuck, I can't even look at the screen right now, or, like, this is horrifying. Like, I never had, like, a visceral reaction.
Yeah, the only like, one I did for that was with Monster Genitalia.
Yeah, but even then, it was a little cartoonish.
I mean, I was kind of just, like, horrified, but couldn't look away. Like,
yes, that's a good way of putting it. But, like, man, I was like, damn, that dick demon is, those are props right there. Like, I don't know, it was weird. But yeah, like, even then, I don't think that segment, as great as it is, it would fit with the first two installments. It wouldn't fit tonally in those first two.
I mean, because I feel like one and two are so similar and consistent in their tone, that I feel like the third one, like, while I can respect and appreciate that it was, like, an experiment and a change in form, I don't think it was entirely successful, especially considering that, like, the tone had kind of already been pre-established, so I don't know. I feel like there were ways to change things up without completely going off the rails like this one did.
Yeah, off the rails. That's a good way.
It is entirely off the rails. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I entirely agree. Okay, I have a couple fun questions as well.
Hey, let's do it.
So, you are picking a director to do a vignette for this very specific VHS film, like specifically VHS Viral. What director are you picking and why?
2014 Phil Acevedo.
Damn, you took my answer.
Is that yours too?
Yes.
Oh.
I thought that answer as I wrote it. I was like, I'm going to say Phil.
Oh, I was totally ready to go. I'm like, give Phil just a regular camcorder. Let's see what he can do with a couple bucks, you know?
That's
same brain.
Same brain. That's funny as shit. Wow, dude.
Oh, that's awesome. No, who would I actually, for this film?
Yeah.
It's kind of hard to say, to be honest with you, because, like, this seems kind of, like, just low budget fare. Like, I can't think of somebody who would, like, fit the Los Angeles tone maybe a little. You know what? No, I have one. Michael Bay.
Okay.
Give Michael Bay some money, and he's like, do your LA shit, but do it scary. Michael Bay is going to do a good goddamn job with one VHS segment, whichever one he wants to do. Probably the bumper.
Trying to think, like, who was, like, popular in 2014?
This would be a good break for Michael Bay. He was doing Pain and Gain and all kinds of other shit.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't
know. I mean, this is just because I love this particular movie, but imagine how crazy it would be if the Russo brothers did a vignette, because 2014 is the year Winter Soldier came out.
Oh, that'd be great. That'd be fantastic special effects.
Yeah. I need the Russo brothers' weird fucking, like, technology's the problem fucking vignette. That would be sick.
Yes. And they're coming off of, like, not only that, but they had already done, like, Arrested Development and Community and all those other shows. So, like, they're still not quite the blockbuster Russo brothers yet.
No, it's even though they had one. Pre-Winter Soldier, so it's before they get to do that.
Oh, great call, I would definitely say.
I like the Michael Bay one, too. It's just, like, fun. His pre-ambulance.
Oh, yeah, pre-ambulance. Or just do the same movie, just cut it.
Sure,
horror between
sure. He's the one who directs the vignette I was talking about, where we get the story of the driver and how he was forced to be, create a police chase.
There we go. And you know what? Ice Cream Truck ends up being a Transformer. There we
Damn,
go.
Damn, yeah. Mm-hmm. Love that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so you and me, Anthony, we both have had our fair share of sirens, helicopters, high-speed chases going around our respective apartments. You in Los Angeles, me in Orange County. What kind of car chase would get your attention?
Just general describing a car chase that I would be like, oh, I gotta
like, check this out. Because, like, this guy, like, for some reason, because it went so close to him, he was like, I have to follow this car chase, even though high-speed chases happen in Los Angeles every fucking
all
day.
All the time.
All the fucking time. Yeah, you
typically want to avoid them.
Yeah. What specific criteria or, like, it's a weird way to phrase it, but what's your dream high-speed car chase?
Oh, shit. My dream high-speed car chase. I don't know. Oh, that's a tough one.
I have mine, if you want to think
of
yours.
What is yours?
Oh, yes. I want a full-blown, like, killdozer, like, chase.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I want, like, someone in a fucking bulldozer, like, a tank, like, the killdozer, for those, like, it's just, I need that going down my street, which would just be so funny to me, because people drag race on my street all the fucking time.
I mean, that would be like, what do you call, like, justice almost?
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. It's like, that would get me out of, like, out of my apartment and looking at what's happening on the street. Like, that would get me to go look versus anything else that happens. Because also, as I'm sure our fine listeners have heard, there are helicopters all around my apartment at all hours for no reason whatsoever. Mm-hmm.
Very, very true. Very, very true. You know what, though?
Hmm.
I got mine.
Okay, what's yours?
I got mine exactly. I need the exact same vehicles and villains for a Mad Max Fury Road.
Ooh, okay.
Just running through the goddamn city.
That's ultra specific. Yes. I love it.
Right, flaming guitar, Immortal Joe, the whole fucking thing on the way to Valhalla, witness me. I need to see that done in real life with the popo chasing after them.
Sure, you need the guy who's, like, hanging on wires playing the guitar, it fucking spits fire.
Yeah,
the dude has a name, and I'm forgetting the name, but it's...
I don't know, but that'd be great. Like, they replicate it. Honestly, I don't want exactly them, but I want people trying to do their shit because it looked even more insane. Is having practical, regular-ass people trying to do the thing, and it would end so bloody. It'd be great. I'd have to walk outside at least for, like, 10 minutes.
I appreciate that. That is a great answer. Far better than mine. All right. Let's...
Killdozer's good. Killdozer would be fun, though, too.
I enjoy a good Killdozer moment. Mm-hmm. Let's wrap this bitch up. Anthony Fuentes, rate this movie out of 5 film glitches.
Oh, this is... I would say 2.5 satanic snatches for sure. that's what I'm looking at. 2.5.
Cool. I will rate this 2 out of 5. Monster cocks.
Oh, nice. I was gonna say hungry magic capes.
So. hungry magic capes. I was trying to think of a good cape one, but I couldn't think of a fun one. I was gonna say white trash and capes. white trash men and capes. I think that's it for this week. Yeah, but I'm gonna stand by my 2 out of 5. Yeah.
That's this is down the middle for me. It could be much worse, but you know.
Well, that's but
it's
yeah.
popcorn, baby. Hey, that's all it is.
It is a popcorn movie for
empty
sure.
Calories.
The only
empty
thing,
calories.
The only thing is, like, you have to watch parts of this movie unless you speak Spanish.
Oh yeah, with subtitles.
There was one that was subtitled, which, like, is fine. I mean, they're same thing with the other ones. Like, they usually have one that's not in English. But yeah, like, you kind of have to pay attention. Otherwise, you're just gonna look up and just see, like, a Venus flytrap of a vagina, and be very confused.
And you'd be like, okay. Okay.
Alrighty, let's go ahead and wrap it up here. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining us for this week in our second installment of Threequel November. Next week, we are covering something that Anthony is quite excited to cover.
I am so happy.
I am so excited. Can't wait. This is also one of my favorite franchises because it is just so off the walls nuts, and I love it. let's for our hint, let's say it's gonna be a bit of a roller coaster of emotions.
Hey, there we go.
Yeah. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining us. If you like what you heard, please make sure you're subscribed wherever you get your podcasts. We started getting some new ratings and reviews coming in, which is awesome. Thank you guys so much for doing that. You're the absolute best. Doing that helps other people find this podcast so they too can enjoy our just unhinged fuckery. If you want to stay up to date on the latest and greatest of all of our podcast shenanigans, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are on Facebook and Twitter at Horror People Pod, and we are on Instagram at Horrible People's Podcast. That is HORRORBLE People's Podcast. You can find Anthony on Twitter and Instagram at Hyrulean Hustler. And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Ghost Coffee Shop. I'm slowly dipping my toe back in Twitter, now known as X, after a long, long, long breakaway. So, feel free to check us out there. And in the meantime, don't build interdimensional portal traveling devices,
I think. Right, yes. And
unless you're prepared to face the consequences.
And also, you know, good luck scaling that wall, Phil. I think you got this.
See you soon, Phil.
See ya.
Bye. Bye.